And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hola! ¿Cómo estás? Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi! I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, hi everyone!
Hola!
Hola!
Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Gringa loca!
Arriba! Arriba Ahsoka! Ahsoka Anakin Tequila!
Yoda y cajones!
Cajones Yoda! I don't know what we're doing. So, let's get back to this. And in this episode, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka form an uneasy partnership with four deadly bounty hunters to help protect a local farmer. A local farmer? There's more than one. What the hell, Wikipedia? A farming village. From Hondo Naka and his band of pirates. There will be hat-flinging pirates and wimpy dudes that I want to punch in the face. This week we're talking about bounty hunters. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, pretty good. We almost had a Lerman situation here, but...
That's one of my notes.
Yeah. I'm sure these guys weren't no Lermans, though.
Mm-mm.
Let me tell ya.
Man, here I thought I was being original with my notes. I thought I was going to be like, yeah, man, I'm going to blow up people's minds because they're fucking Lermans, but they're not. Did you have a good week?
I did have a good week.
That's good. I'm very excited for Friday.
Is that what's happening?
I'm going on vacation. I'm
going
to be getting the hell out of this place.
Right? You're off to sunny Florida, right?
Yeah, or half Matthew destroyed Florida, which, take your pick.
It's still sunny.
Yeah, actually, I'm not going to that side of the coast. I'm going to the other side, the Gulf Coast.
Nice.
So they just got a crap ton of rain over there. But yeah, I'm going to go visit my mom. And actually, I don't know when you're going to be putting in the episode. We're doing an episode with my mom. But I just realized, would it be the next week episode? Or I don't know when we're going to hear it, but it's going to be there.
It's coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be sometime. Or it might have already aired when we're talking about this. Either way, listeners, my mom, who got me into Star Wars, is going to do a show with us. So I'm very excited about that. And you'll probably hear my stepdad in the background. And he's great, too, and I love him. So it's going to be fun. Though, I know I mentioned it a few episodes ago, I was going to try and get over to Orlando to see my friend Bill Meeks and Amory D. Simone from Greetings from Storybrooke podcast and Legends of Gotham. Don't think that's going to happen.
Doesn't look like that's in the cards.
Yeah, because I'm only there for 5 days, and it's like my sister's baby shower, and we're going to go to the Dolly Museum, we're going to go to the beach, and I don't foresee the time for me to actually get over to Orlando.
Did you say the Dolly Museum?
Yes,
D-A-L-I?
Yeah.
Ooh!
I found that out very recently, because somebody came in with a Salvador Dolly bag in my store. And I was like, oh, cool, like, that's a Salvador Dali bag. And she was like, yeah, I got it from the Dali Museum in Tampa. And I was like, what? What? And I called my mom, because my mom lives about, you know, give or take an hour north of Tampa. And I was like, Mom!
That better be a kick-ass museum. That's all I got to say. If it's the Salvador Dali Museum, it's just got to be kick-ass.
I know. So I was just like, Mom, did you know there's a Salvador Dali Museum in Tampa? And she went quiet, and she went, what? We gotta go!
Oh my god. I've been lucky enough to see a couple original Salvador Dalis, and wow, you're in for a treat, especially if it's a dedicated museum. They've got to have some of his bigger pieces in, you know, some of his giant mural-sized stuff, I would hope. I hear that stuff is amazing.
Yeah, like, I'm just ecstatic. I can't wait. I am just...
Oh, I love me some Salvador Dali, let me tell you.
Yeah, and she has a comic book store that's, like, really massive, like, 10 minutes... It's, like, I work in a comic book store, and it's, like, four times bigger than my store. So, like, I plan to go to that comic book store, so I'm really excited, and of course I get to see my family. So, and I get to meet a niece and a nephew I haven't met yet. So, because I haven't been to Florida in over a year, they were born in the last year, so I haven't met them. So I get to see my babies. But I have to leave my cat, so I'm sad. I wish you could come with me. But I get to meet my mom's awesome dog named Stan Lee. Not Stanley, Stan Space.
Stan Lee. Excellent.
Yeah, this is, I told you, my mom's a nerd like I told you. Anyway, bounty hunters. So, yes, it's almost vacation time, and I can't wait. So, oh, and news that only Hope think is really cool, I got the Ahsoka Pop figure.
Ooh.
She's really cool. My props to my bud Cody for picking it up for me. I got her, and the Ahsoka novel dropped yesterday, our time. And so...
You mean your friend Commander Cody?
No. More like really awesome goth with tattoos all over him and piercings and Mexican Cody.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Arriba, Cody!
He can't be the Commandante Cody. I don't know. He could
actually
still be a commander.
Did I tell you the story?
He's worthy of being a commander, getting you Ahsoka's.
Yeah. But did I ever tell you the story about Cody breaking into my car?
No. Oh, yeah, I think you did. I don't know if you did on the show.
Long version short, I locked my keys in my car, so Cody... We work in the same mall. We just work in different stores. We used to work at Hot Topic together. We don't work together anymore, sadly. I miss working with him. So I called him, and I was like, Cody, I need help. I'm locked out of my car. And so he came over, and about an hour later, because we had to, like, go to Target and, like, pick up some stuff. And Target doesn't sell fucking wire hangers. But at the end, we were finally prying open my door so he could fish it out. And I looked at him, and I was like, Cody, how do you know how to break into a car? And he looks and goes, because I'm Mexican. So,
arriba!
And then he looked at me seriously. He was like, no, my brother works on cars, and he showed me how to. So his brother's a mechanic, so... But I had to laugh. I was just like, yay, please don't let security drive by as we're trying to break into my car.
I think breaking into a car, especially with a coat hanger, becomes a skill almost everybody gets eventually, because everybody locks their keys in their car sometime.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
they haven't done it themselves, they've at least, you know, been watching their friend who did do it. So, yeah, I don't think it's as much of a skill for criminals as it has. I think actually, as long as there's been cars, I'm sure everybody's had to learn how to. I know how to break into my own house if I have to, if I forget my keys.
I find it funny that I just imagine like people trying to break into like 1920s cars, and they're just like, "All right, old chap, let's break into the car. Yay, what what." Anyway, so we should talk about bounty hunters. Bounty Hunters is the 39th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on March 27, 2010 in the UK and April 2nd, 2010 in the US. It was written by Carl Ellsworth and directed by Stuart Lee. And some extra information about the episode. Hondo Onaka's line, "Speak softly and drive a big tank," is reference to Theodore Roosevelt's foreign policy, "Speak softly and carry a big stick." The episode is dedicated to the Japanese filmmaker Akira Kurosawa, the director and producer and co-writer of such films as The Hidden Fortress and Seven Samurai, to the latter of which this episode is an homage. Like Seven Samurai, the episode features a group of seven heroes who are defending an otherwise defenseless town against a much larger group of invaders. Both the samurai and the Jedi, knowing that they are outnumbered, teach the villagers how to defend their homes. Dave Filoni is the voice of Imbo, while Suki, the bounty hunter Suki, her voice actress is Anna Graves, who also voices Satine a few episodes back. And finally in the, is this a finally? Yes, finally. Finally in the episode featurette, oh, I scrolled too far. In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni said, "The secret in Bounty Hunters I've been very tight-lipped about surrounds the character of Imbo. I needed a way to come up with a language for Imbo. My editor, Nick Anastasio, who is French, had some of his Smurf books written all in French because his son Alex comes in and reads them sometimes. I just picked one of these up. I cannot speak French. And I opened it up and I purposely announced these French words poorly." And then at this point in the featurette, they show a clip of Imbo speaking, and in subtitles, he's talking about Smurfs in French. Dave continued, "It just so happens that Nick liked it and Stuart, the director, liked it. So in the end, I am Imbo. I've kept that a secret from the crew. Most of the crew doesn't know that. I have been incredibly resistant to ever play a character in the show. In the original script, Imbo died. Everybody was watching it and they were like, oh god, I really like Imbo. Does he really die? Not because of the voice, but because his actions were cool. Suddenly, people were saying, we shouldn't kill him. We don't need to kill him. Then we had to reshoot the episode, and then Imbo was alive. So Imbo's out there now. Who knows what Imbo's future is going to be? He's got a cool hat, and maybe Imbo likes wolves too. We'll just have to see. And that last line is a nod to the fact that Dave Filoni loves wolves, and in future episodes, Imbo does get a dog-like companion. Rawr.
Wow. It's funny. This is a homage to the Seven Samurai, and at the same time, it's kind of an homage to Star Wars, I want to say number 7. The first Marvel Star Wars comic of the original, 77 run.
Okay.
That was post the movie.
How so?
Well, it was the story of Han Solo and Chewbacca going to another planet and getting enlisted by farmers to help them protect them from pirates who all ride up on space motorcycles, on hovering motorcycles to terrorize them. And it was a homage to the Seven Samurai.
Huh.
So we're also getting a nice little homage basically, Hondo in the comic was Sergi X, which was a parody of the comics artist Sergio Aragonés. He sort of looked like Sergio Aragonés, and he was just a crusty, mean pirate. And those creatures that went walking by at the beginning?
The Rancors?
Were those Rancors?
That's what the Wikipedia said.
Yeah, they look like green, sort of, well... There's a giant monster very similar to that in that story too. So this one takes me really back into also the old Star Wars comics.
I didn't know that because I've never read the original run of Marvel ones.
Oh. You're in for a treat if you ever decide to do that.
Every time we get them in though, they're always super expensive, so I can never buy them for myself.
Well, there's collections of them, too. There's 8 million different collections of them now.
That's true. I should see if I can, find one at a used bookstore or something.
And I think, I don't know if you do the e-comics or, the that sort of thing, but I know there was some sort of deal recently where it was real cheap to get the whole original, 107 Marvel run in e-form.
I like holding my comics.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a purist.
Me too.
I'm a purist. You know who's also a purist? So if Yoda's a purist, does that mean he's uncut?
Pure force. Oh, Yoda is as is Yoda was born. Take as you will that.
I caught you off guard with that one, didn't I?
Off guard.
I'm not sure if I like this platitude, though. I see where they're going with it, but I feel like if we had another episode with Sugi and Obi-Wan, this would actually, work.
It's just one of those ones. It still could be random. It does sort of work with this.
Right.
There, and even a character does say, you're going to have to trust me at some point, I think, in this story, so...
Is it bad enough that I should open my fortune cookie that I still have saved?
Not that bad, no. Okay. We haven't gotten to break glass in emergency yet.
Okay,
here we go.
Courage makes heroes, but trust builds friendship. In bed.
Yeah, it does.
Oh. Yoda's safe word is Palpatine.
My peanut M&M's just got really sour in my mouth. No. All right, so, Act 1. All right, you guys. It's time for another outline that I wrote at 1 a.m. Are we ready?
Yay, those are the best ones.
Thank you. Maybe I should just write all of them like that.
Sure.
Act 1. Oh my god, there's still a war! The Jedi are spread so thin, many planets are left to fight the Separatists on their own. Medical stations are being picked off by the Separadics. Sorry. I didn't realize I wrote that. Are picked off by the Separadics. And because attacking the sick and wounded people are totally their new thing. So apparently they didn't go to the Second Geneva Convention to get the memo. Or would it be the Second Geonosis Convention?
Definitely 1 a.m.
Yeah, I told you. Anyway, Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan are sent to Felucia, a.k.a. Hondo's crib planet, to investigate why a medical station stopped contacting them. As soon as they arrive at the planet, vulture droids attack them. The medical station was more than likely destroyed. Their ship takes a hit and dives toward the planet. Ahsoka is like, oh my god, Anakin, stop crashing ships. They eject as their ship bleeds the vulture droids into a big rock and crashes them all. Our heroes bounce around in human hamster balls while Obi-Wan tries not to puke in his mask. They watch a gaggle of rancors mosey by, and Anakin and Obi-Wan bicker about a plan. Ahsoka is like, ladies, if you're done, you might notice the smoke behind you, which means there's a town. They find a village growing, I know I'm about to say this, Nicillin, that's what it was. Growing Nicillin, one of the most valuable healing herbs in the galaxy. But the village seemed deserted. They check the barn and find a non-farmer ship in there. Anakin and Ahsoka enter a house and pull up a floor hatch to find hairless Fraggle Rock characters. I mean, hair the farmers hiding. Suddenly, a gun is pointed to Ahsoka's head as four bounty hunters surround them. Obi-Wan joins the party. Just like when it looks like a rumble is going to break out in full snapping West Side Story glory, the lead Fraggle named Kasis comes and stops everyone. We're saved! We have Jedi now! Hooray! Suki, the leader of the bounty hunter, reminds them that they already have a deal with them. Kasis tells the Jedi they're having a bit of a pirate problem. They look like Fraggles.
They do look like hairless Fraggles. That's a good call.
Yeah, so they're going to be referred to as Fraggles for the rest of this, just so people know. Because I think they're just straight up Felucians. I guess that's what people from Felucia looks like.
Felucianites?
That's what it said on the Wikipedia. Now they're Fraggles. So what do you think of Act 1?
I like those escape pods. I like how they sort of open up like seeds when they land.
Me too!
It's visually really nice with the Felucia being, sort of a big, you know, just a super flora planet. You know, it's just like...
I like how they bounce. They're just like, whoop, whoop. And poor Obi-Wan's just like, ugh.
I love how also you get a real feel for those plants. Like whenever anybody's touching or handling a plant, you see they're like these big spongy, they're like almost like mushrooms or funguses, you know, which makes sense because they're making penicillin.
Yeah.
Which I believe is made from a fungus. So it would be a really bad planet to be on if you were, like, asthmatic clone. Had a lot of spores and stuff in the air.
Oh, I just imagine Rex with allergies and he's, like, sniffling.
But it's a very colorful planet. It's very similar. It's actually, that design sort of showed up before Avatar. But it's a very Avatar-like world, you know, very colorful, you know, blooming plants, and usually there's sort of a one color scheme to these shows. Like it'll be a really red show, or, you know, it'll be red in one location and blue in another. This one, the colors are all, it's just colorful. They're all over the place. You know, there's yellows and blues and greens and pinks and purples everywhere constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, the color palette's kind of a mess, but it looks really neat.
You know, I mentioned that too, because last time we were on Felucia, we only got to see Hondo's palace. And it's almost like, you know, like a rocky terrain part of the world. Mm-hmm. So, like, it would give the impression that Felucia might be like a rocky kind of deserty world. But, like, no, it's a multi-terrain world, and we got to see this side of it. So I agree. Though I will say every time I hear Avatar, I think Avatar the Last Airbender. So that
The other one, the three.
You don't get a second to realize which Avatar you're talking about.
But yeah, and I imagine Hondo's sort of living out in the craggy. He's living out in the outskirts, to stay hidden, I would imagine, or, you know, are out of the way.
Mm. But yeah, it's a really, really, really pretty planet. Let's see what I had. You know, after all the Geonosis arcs losing her lightsabers and stuff, in this opening part, especially after they crash, Ahsoka seems a lot more chilled and composed than we've seen her recently. Like the boys are just like snipping at each other, and she's just like, guys.
She even looks a little younger. It's almost like this one maybe takes place like earlier, you know, in the timeline or something, maybe.
Let me see. Clone Wars. Yeah, but like, I don't know. I would hope that she's not younger only just because of the fact that she just seemed more mature than we've seen her in the past. So I kind of don't want her to be younger.
I mean, she even physically looked a little, especially in that whole scene where Obi-Wan and Anakin are sort of
scrubbing. It is earlier.
It is earlier.
Okay, let's see. According to the chronological thing on StarWars.com, this is after the whole Cad Bane trilogy in the opening. And so it's Holocron Heist, Cargo of Doom, Children of the Force, which is Cad Bane, and then Bounty Hunters, which I like hearing because this goes with my next note, then Zillow Beast, and then we go into the Geonosis trailer, and then we'll be back on track for next week. So then that actually nulls and voids my note a little bit, because it's because of the Geonosis arc to me that she felt like she was more mature, but this actually takes place before the Geonosis arc. Interesting, but post-Cad Bane, which actually helps my next note. My next note was, I really liked Ahsoka's automatic reaction when the bounty hunter showed up. Like, she grabbed her, like, lightsaber and everything, because the last time she ran into a bounty hunter, it was Cad Bane, and he almost killed her by shoving her out in an airlock. So I thought that was a very justified reaction on her part.
Well, I like that we also get that, like, Hondo's kind of their frenemy.
Yeah.
But, there's still like, that we still might get into a deadly situation with this guy, you know, now that they're sort of, you know, poking their nose into his business, so
frenemy,
to speak.
Do you mean, when you say that, do you mean the bounty hunters are his frenemy or the Jedi are his frenemy?
No, the Jedi, not the Jedi in general, but Obi-Wan and Anakin are kind of frenemies with Hondo.
Mm-hmm.
And Ahsoka, you know, they've had to deal with him before, and it was, you know, it wasn't total horrible. Let's, you know, they've had to work together before.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you would think also Hondo would be like, hey, I remember these guys, I'm not going to mess with them, but not at all.
Yeah, you're starting to get into Act 2 a little bit though.
Yeah, okay.
Because Hondo hasn't even shown up yet. But I didn't have anything else for Act 1.
No, other than that, yeah, we sort of got, like, a little bit of a Lerman situation just because we've got farmers at their houses, but we'll see how that develops in the intervening acts here.
Man, I'm really bummed you got me on my Lerman thing, because that was, like, my big note of Act 3. I was like,
I'm sory.
No, it's totally okay. I'm only messing with you.
I didn't read them. If I would have read them ahead of time, I would have known and not said anything.
No, it's totally.
I didn't think anybody else was going to make any kind of Lerman connection.
Honey, it's okay. Honey, it's fine. You okay?
Sorry.
We okay?
I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm going to sit back down. You're like,
sorry.
Well, guys, buckle in, because Act 2 is very long. This was also more, of a four-act episode, so I just put these two acts together. So, I'm about to read a lot. Ready?
I'm ready.
Alright, Act 2. They all gather together for dinner, and Kasis gives them the 411 on the pirates. Pretty much they have to give their crops to the pirates, or the village gets destroyed. Kasis can't do this, since farming doesn't pay well anyway, but hiring bounty hunters to protect them is cheaper than giving their booty to the pirates. Anakin is like, you guys should tote some goats, bite them, despite the fact that you're 2 feet tall Muppet wannabes. Kasis is like, excuse you, I'm a Fraggle, and we're not fighters. but there are now 7 of you guys to beat up Captain Jack Sparrow. Suki asks what the Jedi want. When they say that they need a ship in the barn, she's like, well, that's my ride. That is the Lola de my Coulson. So we're busy right now, so we can't be your personal Uber. Obi-Wan says that they can't help which pisses off Ahsoka. Ahsoka and Anakin. Obi-Wan argues that they need to report to the destroyed medical station to first reinforce Felucia. It's better the farmers get robbed by pirates than have General Grievous come to the planet. Suddenly, a tiny fraggle runs up saying that the pirates are coming. The pirates roll into town and Suki stands her ground to tell them that if they want the crops, they have to buy them or get the hell out. Enter one of my favorite people ever, Hondo Onaka. He's like, oh my god, Kenobi Skywalker, last time I saw you, I was torturing you with Dooku. Fun times. I can't believe you came all the way back to hang out with me again. Kenobi asks Hondo to leave, and Hondo is like, bro, you cut me deep. Hanging out with these scum bounty hunters and not me? WTF, bro. He offers Suki a double what the Fraggles are paying him, but Suki stands firm that they do not break deals. When the second threat of a West Side Story snapping rumble might break out, Obi-Wan calms everyone down. He offers Hondo Republic credits for a ride, as well as letting the farmers be. Hondo's like, okay, Kenobi, say this was the American Civil War, right? And you were in Georgia or something, and you were offering me Union money. It would be useless because I get paid in Separatist money, so no deal. Kenobi is like, bro, please. And Hondo is like, sorry, bro, no deal. Hondo subtly suggests that he will shoot down anyone who tries to leave the planet and burn all the crops in the process. He leaves. Hold on. Excuse me. Our heroes look over a map of the town, and Suki in this scene looks absolutely done with life. Seriously, go back and look at her face. She looks bored out of her mind. Anyway, Obi-Wan says that there are pirates, so they'll come from two sides, and Mayor Fraggle says 4 bounty hunters can't stand that many people on their own. Anakin takes sides with Ahsoka and wants to fight, but Obi-Wan denies it again. Then follows this lovely exchange, which is funny since it's coming from Satine's voice actress. Anakin says, you guys are in way too deep. Suki responds, just like Satine said to Obi-Wan a few episodes back, said the peacekeeper who can't keep the peace. Obi-Wan then gets himself stuck in a loophole. He says that the war isn't the fault of the Jedi. If more worlds stood up and defended themselves, the Separatists would have a harder time. Anakin goes, aha, by George, there's the answer. He suggests training the villagers so they can defend themselves. A whiny fraggle named Delaney bitches, what's the point of hiring bounty hunters if they're just gonna fight for themselves? Anakin says that they'll all be ready. Suki continues to look like she hates everyone in the room. It's a training montage time! It's the eye of the fraggle, it's the thrill of the fight. Gonna kick the shit out of some pirates. Okay, I wish it was really that awesome, but it's not. While half the farmers are harvesting crops and putting them in the barn, Anakin works on training. Delaney bitches some more, and Anakin proves him wrong that their farming staff can be weapons. Suki and Obi-Wan discuss the safety of the farmers in the fight. She pretty much says, look, man, I'm not a pirate. We're similar, but we're not the same. Think what you like, but I'm gonna go do my damn job my way, so you should only use your bearded mouth to make out with your Mandalore girlfriend and kindly shut the fuck up, okay? While training more farmers, Ahsoka saves the bounty hunter, Serapis, from a tree crushing him. Serapis is this big droid-looking guy, but the chest pops open and Serapis is actually a tiny little guy in a big Iron Man suit. Imbo laughs at the Fraggles, and Delaney once again won't shut up. Obi-Wan says that if they fought their battles for them, then the Fraggles would just get invaded by the next group of villains that came along. A pirate is watching the Mulan montage as the Fraggles are starting to get the hang of fighting. Suki spots the scout and sends Imbo after him. Imbo fights the guy and blocks his blaster with his fucking hat and goes all Punisher on his ass and snaps his neck off and everything. Obi-Wan states that when the scout fails to report in, Hondo will come. Oh my god.
That Embo's a neck snapper, man. He snaps a few necks in this one. That's his preferred mode of kill, it seems like.
I love Embo. He is god. He's one of my absolute favorite characters. Like, after Cad Bane, Bo is my favorite bounty hunter. I love him so much.
I like him because they just sort of leave him as he is, you know? There isn't a lot of character development to him. He's just really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just a really cool, chill guy.
He's just a classic Star Wars sort of character, bounty hunter character you would meet and putting his hat, he's like wearing the hat on his head. He puts his head down and just rushes in and like bounces laser blasts off it. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love him, Bo. Like, he is just, oh, so cool.
Do you think the thing with the little guy in the big suit, the Serapis guy, is a little tribute to Men in Black? It sort of reminds me of.
I said that in my notes! Yes, I do! Yeah, I do! I have that in my notes too, because it's like the Arquilian.
He looks kind of like that guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, we are on the same wavelength tonight, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks just like the Arquilian. I actually looked up Arquilian because I couldn't remember it.
Well, hang on, because I think if I remember right from here on, Clone Wars starts paying a lot of tribute to a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like the Arquilian royal family guy riding around the human exoskeleton suit, only it's not a human suit, it's a Men in Black, it's a Iron Man suit. Man, Chris, we are on the same page!
Yep.
Yeah, boy, well, how would you think about too?
I liked it a lot. It's, unlike the Lerman, these guys were like, okay, we'll fight. I don't know why they couldn't do the math of like, okay, why do you want us to fight if we hired the bounty hunters? It's like, because then it's bounty hunters plus Jedi plus you.
Yeah.
You know, that whole sort of, where the Lermans were pacifists, these guys are just kind of lazy.
I wouldn't say lazy, it's just not there.
I don't want to learn to fight. It didn't even occur to them to learn to fight, but they took to it fairly well. They did pretty good.
You know, I think it's a lot like, it's just not really their skill set, I think is the better way to explain it. It's like if you told a librarian to go be, like, a Navy SEAL. Like, they're going to be like, what are you talking about? I can't go out and, like, beat the crap out of a guy. I'm a librarian. But, like, I think it's, like, something. So I think it's just a foreign concept to them. So.
Well, once they start killing, they don't have. They're just worrying about the mechanics of it rather than the ethics of it. They have no problem killing the pirates that come in to attack them. So yeah. I like these guys.
Go Fraggles. Ah, I dropped a thing of chapstick. Come back.
Uh-oh.
It's okay. I got it back. I'm going to put it on my face. Ah! You were saying?
That was about all I had for Act 2. I mean, I really like this episode. I don't have a lot to say about it because it's pretty just straight up tribute to the Seven Samurai. You know, it's pretty straight up, you know, Western story of, you know, well, you know, I mean, Eastern story if you're talking Kurosawa film, but he was also playing off American Western. It's like, and Star Wars was definitely influenced by Kurosawa and the comics. This is just such a back and forth, you know, tribute going on here that it's amazing. But it's just a straight up, you know, hey, the guys come into the Western town and save the villagers, you know. It's yeah. Basically as simple as that. And, you know, we get to find out whether the bounty hunters they hired are going to be, you know, on our side or they're going to, you know, turn on them and they end up being honorable. And it's just a real simple, well-executed story.
So I only have a few notes for this act too, most of my acts are in the third section. But Delaney's voice pisses me off. I can't stand every time he opens his mouth, I just want to punch him. Because it'd be one thing if he was just nervous and it was just like, oh, I don't know about this. But he's just like, I don't know.
Almost to the point of simpering, yeah.
I'm like, oh my god, Delaney, I want to punch you in the... Even, you know, later on, he ends up saving people and killing a pirate. He's just like, oh, I killed a pirate! good. I'm like, oh my god. Like, I can't. I think he, the person.
You're expecting a Fraggle not to be annoying?
Fraggle Rock is coming back. They just announced it.
I heard that.
Yeah, but let's see. Dani is actually voiced by somebody else in this episode. Who voiced you? Bounty Hunters. He's also the same voice actor who did. Scroll faster. Come on, computer. You got this. As the pirate scout who was all like, "Burn! I you gotta kill him, fight him, bo." But yeah, that was not very helpful. I'm so sorry. Oh, Masamado's voice actor is Delaney.
Oh, okay.
And actually, what is this? Tarkin. Tarkin too. Tarkin's a voice actor.
Oh, that's interesting.
So now I'm imagining Tarkin just being like, "Guys, we gotta blow up the Death Star! We gotta go blow up Alderaan!"
He would be like Professor Smith in Lost in Space, basically.
Danger! Anyway, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I freaking love Hondo. I love Hondo every time. And then my two real serious notes. I like this whole bounty hunter versus pirate thing going on in this episode, because both are unsavory types of people who do dirty jobs. Both have their own kind of code that they live by. And it's interesting to see how they're so similar, but they're also very different. And I can't put my finger on exactly what it is that makes them that much different. Because they're pretty much, like, the same. And I think a lot of it is that, like, bounty hunters are doing a job to get paid while pirates just take.
Yeah, pirates are just, you know, the raiding horde.
Yeah.
Whereas bounty hunters are going to end up on whatever side pays them first, mm-hmm. you know? But also, bounty hunters could be almost to the level of pirates where they, you know, depending on their code of ethics, but this group is a little more sympathetic and ethical.
Yeah, because I
you know, honor amongst thieves type.
Like, if this was, like, Cad Bane, I don't think Cad Bane would have been like, "You stop talking to these villagers that way." Like, she's flat out just like, "They're people, leave them alone."
Right, right.
And so I think that's more of Sugi's character, not like a... Because I can't see, like, Boba or even Aura Singh doing that. I think that's Sugi. All Sugi right there.
Well, you know, I mean, and it doesn't always have to be ethics that they're like, "No, you can't buy us out." You know, that could just be trying to keep good cred as bounty hunters, you know, so people hire them because they know they're not going to betray them. But they do seem to have, they do seem to actually like, get to like everybody, you know, and have a empathy for the Fraggles.
I wonder how long they've been there.
Probably not very long.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan's logic of like, we can't help them because they're just going to fall prey to the next group of people that came in. Well, how does that logic fit when they've been there for, you know, however generations living there, doing that without having to deal with that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I actually have a note about Obi-Wan.
It seems to be a new thing, probably with chaos caused by war, that they're getting victimized more. And their product, which is, you know, to deal with people who've been injured and have infections, you know, most, you know, that would be the demand for it, all of a sudden becomes something that two warring factions are after, you know, instead of just something that they provide to the galaxy.
They just have to, like, grow their weed, man. We should call them the Red Eyes. The Red Eye Fraggles.
Well, if I was a writer for Clone Wars, it would have happened.
Well, that's okay. We had a red-eyed clone the last few episodes ago.
That's true. We did. We did.
So, and then my last note is something that I just want to continue to watch as we progress through the rest of the series is the Hondo Kenobi quote-unquote friendship. Hondo mentions in this act that they have a friendship, but in Rebels, in his first appearance in season 2, Hondo tells Ezra that he was friends with a Jedi once, being Kenobi. I want to keep an eye on how this development kind of starts happening, especially when we get to, I think it's season 5, when Kenobi and Hondo actually have to team up against a similar enemy, but I won't say what enemy because I don't want to spoil it for you, Chris. But like in the future, they do team up, and so I kind of want to watch how their friendship continues to develop. I think that's something, a good thing to kind of keep an eye out for.
And so we shall. That's our job, Hope.
Yeah, That is our non-paying job. Our resume building job. This is our resume building job. But I didn't have anything else for Act 2, did you?
No, I have very few notes for this whole episode.
Okay, so most of my notes are in Act 3. So, Act 3! There's a plane flying over. Can you hear it? Can you hear the plane?
Oh, I can hear it.
Zipline! Zipline!
Boss!
I live about less than 2 miles away from an airport, and I have my windows open, so I'm just going to get a little further along. There we go. All right, so Act 3 is the plane. Hondo is like, man, I don't want to fight my Kenobi BFF forever, but bygones and all, so let's hop in our big tanks and Theodore Roosevelt these Panama Canal fraggles. Yes, I did just drop a history joke. Anyway, the village is scattering into position as they raise the plasma fence to surround the village and protect the Crocs. The pirates arrive, and we finally have our rumble. Imbo steals a speeder right away and takes out some dudes. The villagers joust pirates off their speeders while Ahsoka and Serapis drop some trees on the others. When his suit malfunctions and gets damaged, Serapis spider monkey jumps on a pirate and throws him off. Hondo shoots with his big tank from up on the ridge and laughs like a maniacal loon while doing it. And then he shoots Imbo! Aww! The heroes fall back to the barn. Hondo is not making friends anymore as he screams, "Die, Jedi scum!" Anakin parkours up to the ridge and they fight. Hondo's parrot monkey shoots the tank and makes it wobble in the fight. In a surprise turn of events, Delaney spears a pirate and saves Suki and Obi-Wan. Back to the fight. Anyway, Anakin knocks Hondo over and he grips the ledge. Deciding that he doesn't feel very Vader-like today, Anakin pulls Hondo back up. But that damn parrot monkey blasts the tank at him, and Anakin leaps off just in time to land in front of the village. Hondo, up on his mountain, yells, "I'm not making money on this anymore. You will remember this as the day that you almost caught Captain Jack Sparrow." He hops in his flying saucer and gets out of there. While the village is beaten up, Cases is like, "Good job, Fraggles. Get back to work." Sugi offers the Jedi a ride to the nearest outpost, but the most important thing about this episode is that Imbo is alive, so it's a happy ending.
Yay!
Yay! Imbo!
I like how when Anakin, when Space Monkey is piloting the tank and Anakin's on it, he deals with it by just sticking his lightsaber in the window and like jiggling it around a little bit, and he's like, "I'll take care of it for a few seconds."
You know, I was thinking about that. Like, wouldn't that cut the metal? It didn't cut the metal.
Well, he just sort of stuck it in there and then just like wobbled it all around. You know, it was just sort of like an offhand sort of thing that he did. I just thought it was hilarious.
That's a smart parrot monkey thing.
Yes.
That's a very smart parrot monkey thing.
So I got another history joke. We got a man, a plan, a canal, Hondo, which does not work as a. As a, oh, what the, is it a palindrome?
Yeah.
Yeah. That comes out as Adna Lena Canal, a plan, a man.
I think you lost
that. Yeah, it doesn't work.
I, it's okay, Chris. I still respect you as a person.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. What do you think of Act 3?
Have you seen Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull?
No, it's the only one I haven't seen.
The scene with the saucer reminds me a lot of the one of the last scenes in Crystal Skull where a flying saucer takes off.
And you know, that's why I haven't seen it, because I heard all about the aliens.
In a very windy manner. I think the aliens work in it. I'm not a hater of the aliens in that movie. I'm a defender of that movie. There's parts of it that are a little cheesy, but for the most part, I really like that movie.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll give it a try for you.
Yeah, it's not even if it's the worst Indiana Jones movie, that doesn't make it a terrible movie. And it also depends on what you think of the buff. Also,
Shia LaBeouf. Do it, actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf. Have you ever seen that video?
The what? Which one?
The actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
No.
I have to send it to you afterwards, and we're watching it, and then I'll have to get off and wash clothes to get ready for my fourth trip. But it's amazing. You must see this video, and you have to sit through to the end. So
is it a music video? I may have seen it, but I'm gonna have to see it again because I'm not sure.
It was like a fan video, but it was done in a theater, and they wrote the song about Shia LaBeouf being a cannibal.
I may have seen that.
Yeah, it was a big meme for a while there, but we can watch it again. I'm down for watching that video again. That's yeah. Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf. Anyway. Well, some of my notes, once again, I'm after Cad Bane.
You got a lot of notes on this section.
I was not
really surprised.
Yeah, me too. By the time I finished writing that, I was just like, holy shit, I have a lot of notes. Okay, first and foremost, Obi-Wan spent the entire episode saying they can't fight, and yet they fight at the end anyway. Like, Obi. I mean, it's just, I just made him super, like, I was halfway expecting him just to be sitting off to the side, because he was so against fighting. I mean, because, like, at least with Defenders of the Peace, with the Lurmans and everything, I mean, the reason the Jedi fight is because the Separatists were invading. But these aren't Separatists. These aren't the enemies that the Jedi are supposed to be fighting. So, I mean, it's just, it kind of made him hypocritical, because he was just like, we're not going to fight. And he's like, all right, lightsabers out. Which, I mean, I'm glad he did, because he helped save the Fraggles. But at the same time, I was just like, Obi, Satine would be very disappointed in you.
Yep. Almost like he just has to get it in, you know? He's just got to say it as a little disclaimer.
As, like, the leader of the trio.
Wait, don't stop.
Don't do it. Boring conversation, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was my only shot on it, so now I'm going to start going through this. Here's something I think Rebels does better than Clone Wars. In the fight scene with Hondo and Anakin leaps up half a fucking mountain, right? And then when he's blasted off, he lands well over a football field away. And while I know that they're Jedi and that Anakin is the Chosen One and they have all these supernatural abilities, sometimes it's just way too much even for them to be believable, especially in Clone Wars. And I like that in Rebels, they seem to have toned this down a lot. Like, Kanan and Ezra still uses the Force, and they make big jumps, but they don't leap up, like, half a mountain or anything. Or they don't leap, like, whole football fields at a time. And I feel like Kanan and Ezra are closer to the Luke Skywalker kind of Jedi, while Anakin is far from that model. And the way I mean this is, like, how it's presented to us as viewers in the show.
I agree. Well, I might have a little theory about that. I think back when there were a ton of Jedis that they might have fed off each other's power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having a whole bunch of Jedi, they just collectively were stronger in the light side of the Force. And by the time you get to the Skywalker age, it's just scattered, you know, so you have less of that, you know, episode 2 style fighting where everybody just makes 500 foot leaps and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Which I'm glad they were neat to see, but it takes a lot of
a lot of suspension of disbelief.
Yes, and it kills a lot of suspense to have the Jedi be that super powered, you know?
And that's how I feel. Like, it goes back to the whole, like, Jedi being kind of deus ex machina-y, like, almost godlike.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in Clone Wars, like, they're really bad about doing that with Anakin. But, like, at the same time, like, I know he's the Chosen One, but, like, even then, like, Ahsoka will, like, parkour up the side of a mountain and be fine.
But they're, like, at the peak of their power, but they're also at the low point of, like, their wisdom. You know,
yeah.
So they can do all this crazy stuff, but they're not as tuned in to what's really going on with the Force, I guess.
Because the only time I can only think in Clone Wars, or not Clone Wars, but Rebels, that Kanan and Ezra did something like that, was in the very first episode when Ezra has the crate and he's leaping up to the ghost. But it's still just like maybe two stories, like,
mm-hmm.
like maybe 30, 40, 50 feet at most. But it's not, like, up half a fucking mountain.
Yeah, that was up. Yeah, that was a good 200-foot, 300-foot jump that he made there.
Yeah, and he, like, leapt up there, too, easy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least, like, when Mace Windu did it at the end of the Ryloth line, he was only making maybe, like, 10, 20-foot jump from, like, ship to ship to ship to ship to ship. But, I mean, like, it's not like he leapt over the entire land bridge. that fell. Like, I feel like Anakin would have leapt over the entire land bridge the way that they're presenting him. Not land bridge, the lack of bridge. Lack of bridge is what I mean. So, but yeah, that's a little bit of a pet peeve for me. I don't like when they do that, because that just makes it super, like, when he landed and you look up, like, Hondo's all the way up there. And I was just like, Anakin just survived, like, falling, like, from a 10-story building.
Well, then when he got knocked down, why didn't he just jump right back up there? You know? He was knocked back down, and it was like, oh, there, well, Hondo's going to escape now. It's like, well, you know, why don't you and Obi-Wan just, and Ahsoka just, like, leap right back up there and get to work? But they were down there like, oh, he's too far away.
Yeah. I think the real reason is that it's not their job right now. But yeah, if it was their job to get Hondo, they could just be like, beep. So, and I'm just thinking, and it's mostly with Anakin that I notice this. Like, every once in a while I see Obi-Wan and Ahsoka do it and some of the other Jedi. But with Anakin, it's all the fucking time. They're just like, jump him up a mountain, he'll be fine. Anyway.
Yeah, but they could at least grab Hondo and put him in some sort of maybe space jail, so he wasn't going to be robbing, come back to rob the Fraggles.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, hey, this note's not in the right, this was an Act 2 note, it's not in the right section, sorry about that. So, going back to Act 2 for 2 seconds, because I didn't realize I put this note in the wrong spot. The pace of the training section feels just really long to me. Everyone is just walking and moseying everywhere, and there's not much sense of an urgency. Like after Ahsoka talks with Serapis, she just casually walks away. It's not like, I'm glad you're okay, but I really have to go back to training.
We gotta get to work, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's no real sense of time in this segment. Like, I don't know how much time has actually passed in this episode. I can guess maybe about a day. But for those Fraggles...
Could be a few days, for all we know, though.
Yeah, like, for those Fraggles to be that trained that well, I mean, Mulan had a training montage, and it felt like more time in, like a two-minute song than it did in this. So
it,
like,
couldn't have been too long, because Obi-Wan was pretty urgent that they, you know, that they complete their task. So I don't think that, you know, they probably weren't hanging around there for days, you know?
Yeah. So, like, I feel like the pacing and the time of the, like, the timing of this episode are really off. What I love about Hondo is that they don't overuse him. He's absolutely one of my favorite characters, and he's a fan favorite character, and he's always so much fun to have there, but he could, like, easily be too much very easily. And I compared it to, like, eating fudge. Like, a little bit at a time is really okay, but if you eat too much fudge in one sitting, it will make you sick.
You're done with fudge for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, and so I like that they, like, pepper him in every once in a while, and they do the same thing with Rebels. Like, every time he comes back, you're like, oh my god, Hondo! And then you don't see him for 10 episodes.
Pepper fudge.
Yeah, like, we didn't even see Hondo till season 2, and now, and I think he's only had, what, two, three episodes in a season and a half? Well,
that's about
like,
right.
Yeah, about 2 to 3 episodes. So
that's about the right proportion, I think, of Hondo flavor.
So, all right, let's talk about Lermans. So, this is my actual one massive problem with this episode. I really like this episode a lot, but the thing is, it's already all been done before. Like, this is the Lerman episode with bounty hunters. And again, we see the Jedi coming to a village, and they refuse to fight for the villagers. There's an enemy threatening the village. At the end, the village decides to fight. The only real difference is the Lermans refused to fight for the majority of the time until the very end, and the Fraggles accepted help with the training. So while I like this episode, it's nothing new. And I do enjoy having the bounty hunters there and having Hondo being the bad guy. I really like those aspects of it. So I was wondering, if we didn't have the Lerman episodes, would this actually be, like, a much better episode?
It might be. It didn't suffer as much from that. I noted that, but, I mean, it's kind of a standard trope. I don't know, because as soon as it said it was dedicated to Akira Kurosawa, I was thinking of it more as, you know, a Seven Samurai Magnificent Seven type of movie. So I was enjoying it on that level, so I wasn't feeling that it was too repetitive. It is a weekly kids cartoon show, and as far as that goes, it's way less repetitive. You know, if it has a few story elements that are the same, that's kind of Star Wars too, you know, that resonance of things happening and variations on a theme. So it didn't bother me, but I definitely noted it.
Yeah. I like the Lerman episodes. I know you don't, but I love the Lerman episodes. I love that two-parter. And I think what it does a little bit better, well, for one, it has Rex in it, so I'm already happier.
Right, right.
But for two, being a two-parter, I felt like they had more time to develop it. And I think the pacing of this episode, if this had been a two-parter, they would have more time to develop all the Palantir Hunters and to have these like little relationships and have that more sense of time. And it wouldn't feel kind of rushed. So I think, because I haven't seen The Seven Samurai, so I did get the kind of westerny feel from it. I did, especially with Imbo with his hat and everything. It does have a bit of that. It does have that western feel to it a bit. But at the same time, like, I feel like the Lermans did this episode better, this plot better.
Novembo.
That's my opinion. Though I do, if we could take Hondo and Imbo and put them in the Lerman episode. That,
I like these farmers better than I like the Lerman.
Yeah, I like these farmers better.
Yeah, you know what? It was only Pappy Lerman that really turned me off to the Lerman. The rest of the Lerman I kind of liked. But Pappy Lerman put the bad taste in my mouth.
If Pappy wasn't there and all the Lermans were like, yes, teach us how to fight, then it wouldn't have been as bad.
It would have been a different story altogether, yeah.
Yeah, so it was definitely Pappy. So, but yeah, that's my one big beef about this episode. And then I have a side note that has nothing to do with this. Ready?
Ooh, okay.
So, you and I haven't recorded in a few weeks. The listeners don't realize this, but me and Chris haven't talked in about 2 weeks because of work and stuff. But I started watching Timeless, the TV show Timeless on NBC, and I've been really enjoying the show. And like one of my favorite parts of the show is how they're like, fuck the science of time travel. We need to go back in time now. Adventures in time. And like they just don't explain science. They're just like, we don't have time for this. Get back in time. And so I really like the show. Anyway, one of the main characters named Wyatt. And all throughout the first episode, it kept bugging me. Like, why he sounded so familiar. I could not figure out why Wyatt sounded so familiar. So I finally looked it up. And it's Matt Lantern, who is Anakin's voice actor.
Is this a live action show, right?
Yeah, it is a live action show. And so, like, when I, like, but as Wyatt was talking, like, how he said things just,
right.
I realized it was how he talks as Anakin. And so now I'm just, like, waiting for them to make a Star Wars joke. And I always, like, whenever there's, like, actors from, like, Star Wars and stuff like that, and other shows, I'm always expecting some kind of Star Wars joke. Like, right now, Sam Witwer, who is Darth Maul, is in Once Upon a Time, so I'm waiting for Emma to be like, listen, Darth Maul. Blah, blah, blah. So
joke about getting cut in half or something.
Yeah, because, I feel like the people who know them and, like, know, like, their password, that would be extra funny to them. So, like, I'm waiting for them to make a joke with, like, Wyatt, like, when they're traveling through time, he's like, man, I thought hyperspace was terrible or something. Just something like that. Go watch Timeless. It's a really good show. I've been really, really enjoying it. But, yeah.
I never even heard of it.
Okay, well, let me throw you the premise. So basically, the government makes a secret time machine because it's the government.
That's what the government does.
And a terrorist has stolen this time machine to go back in time. So they recruit a coder who, I'm the only reason I'm emphasizing this because he's a really great character and I'm about to explain more into it. They recruit a coder who can drive the machine, and he's a black guy. His name is Rufus. They recruit a historian named Lucy and a soldier named Wyatt. So it's up to three of them to go back in time and stop this terrorist from changing events in the past. Well, it's really interesting because, like, right away, Rufus is the MVP of the show because so far they've only gone back to American history. And, like, right away in episode one, he's just like, history is not good for me. This will not
right.
be a good idea for me.
Going backwards in American history is not the best
a good
place
idea for
a black man. Yes.
And, oh, God, in the second episode, they're trying to, it's the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And he meets some other black soldiers, and he just knows with the assassination of Lincoln, all this that they fought for is about to get ripped away from them. So he's just trying to warn him. He's like, please don't go south. You don't need to be indentured farmers. And they're like, no, no, Abraham Lincoln's going to like make sure we all get our fields and we're going to go find our families in slavery. And he's like, don't go south. Don't go south. Like, Rufus is such a good character. He's just, he's amazing. But yeah, pretty much they're trying to go back in time to stop this guy from, like, the first episode was the Hindenburg.
Wasn't
like,
Rufus's name the character, I'm sorry to cut you off, the comedian, the late comedian from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the time traveler guy, was named Rufus.
Yeah! Oh my god, I didn't even connect that. Yeah! Yeah, it was. He really was.
George Carlin. That's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah, so... it's hitting all my buttons, my Doctor Who buttons, except for it doesn't explain the science of time travel, because they're just like, fuck the science, we don't have time to talk about this.
We have this machine, and it works.
Yeah, so, like, they use what's called the lifeboat, which was the first prototype, and that's what they used to go back in time. I really like the show a lot, and Matt Lantern is really great in it, but Rufus is the MVP of the show. So, anyway... That's all I had for this show.
So we're gonna we wanna sum this one up.
Numbers.
All right.
So what do you think of the episode?
This is a super solid episode. I really enjoyed watching it. I'm giving it a solid 7.5. Not, you know, maybe it would have been an 8 if it hadn't been so Lermany, but still it's a rock solid fun 7.5.
Was there anything? Who was your favorite character?
Oh, Embo.
You're so cool. I want an entire episode of just Embo. And not understanding him.
I want an Embo figure. He's just a really great design.
Oh, man. I don't think you got to it yet, but there's... No, you wouldn't have, because it's season 6. There's an episode in season 6 where they're chasing Embo, and he just throws off his hat, and he just starts sledding down a snowy mountain on his hat.
Yes.
It's so cool. He's such a cool character.
His hat is basically Captain America's shield.
Yeah.
It's sort of what it is.
I almost made a Captain America joke in my notes, and I held back. I almost did. Almost. But, yeah. All right. Well, for me... God, you're going to be disappointed in me. Like I said, I really do like this episode a lot. It's nice having the golden trio of Ahsoka, Anakin, and Obi-Wan back together. I had to look it up. They haven't majorly been in an episode together since landing at Point Rain. And this is their last time together for the rest of the season. Like, their last big major arc together. So it's really nice having them all back as a group. I really like Sugi and Embo. But there's a few things, like Cerebus is very predictable, and then there's a fourth bounty hunter named Rumi Paramita, who I didn't even mention, because she doesn't do anything, and she doesn't
say
anything, and then she died. So yeah, like, so there was definitely, if this was a two-parter, we would have, like, learned more about Rumi and stuff like that. But it's always a joy to have Hondo, and I love him so much, though I do have to dock some points for this pretty much giving us the Lerman episode again. And if we didn't already have Jedi Crash and Defenders of the Peace, this would feel really fresh and new, like we haven't seen it before. So I gave it a 6.75 out of 10.
Ooh, wow.
Well, and the only reason I was going to give it a 7 out of 10, and then I realized, like, I think one of the Mandalore episodes I had out of 7, and I definitely like the Mandalore episodes better than this. So I kind of lowered it just a little bit. So it's a 6.5
out of 10. It's your show. You can do whatever you want.
I'm going to do whatever I want. I wrote that. I did not write that in the notes, but hey, so just as always, we'd love to hear your feedback from iTunes, Twitter, or the Two True Freaks Facebook page. And this week, we're actually taking a break from our Facebook friends because we got some iTunes feedback. It's really cool. I keep always forgetting to check iTunes every week because there was a time where, like, before every episode, I would check iTunes. And I'd be like, oh, nothing. So I was just like, I haven't checked iTunes in several weeks, and some of these were from September, so I'm sorry.
That also led me, I was talking about this to Scott 2.0, which made him look to see how Garage Sale Gloat was doing. And Garage Sale Gloat, a bunch of people must have gone through. All people, I don't know who they were. I mean, hey, come on, Gene Hendricks is going to show up on there. But we know who he is.
Yeah. Don't die.
But we got some good ones with J-Guys and Jedi. I got some good ones with the Garage Sale Gloat, and it's just very encouraging. And those 5-star reviews put us up in the search engine, so it makes it easier for people to find us.
Yeah, it does. So do you want to take these away?
All right. So the first one, we got one here by Mark Camp, who gave us a 5-star review.
Thank you, Mark.
Love the Clone Wars when it was on. Now I'm doing a rewatch while listening to Hope and Chris review each episode. It's great to hear Chris podcasting about Star Wars again. It's great to be podcasting about Star Wars again. There's been a hole ever since Star Wars Monthly Mondays ended. Well,
don't fear the Reaper.
Don't fear the Reaper, and don't count out growing up Star Wars either. We might be getting that out soon too, hopefully. Hope brings such passion and energy to the show. Aww, I'd say this is a great listen, but definitely not for the kiddies.
No,
unless your kiddies are really classy.
You know, I as a tangent before we get to the next one, you guys know I work in a comic book store. And there's a comic called I Hate Fairyland. It's by Scotty Young, and he's known for like doing like a lot of like the kiddie variants and stuff like that, where they look like tiny like chibi kid versions of all the superheroes. Well, I Hate Fairyland is an adult title, but it looks like a kid's title. And it's about this little girl in Fairyland, and she's pretty much just going Punisher out on Fairyland. Anyway, this little girl came in, and she picked up I Hate Fairyland off the shelf. And she was maybe like 6 or 7. I was like, oh, honey, no, but that's an adult title. And her dad looks at me and goes, no, it's fine. She likes that kind of thing. She watches Walking Dead with us. And I was like, I'm not judging your parenting. Okay.
I have friends who are parents like that. One of my best friends growing up, it's not her kid, but she married her husband's kid. And they've been watching horror movies. They've been watching them. What's that?
She married her husband's kid?
No, she has a kid, but it's not her kid. It's her husband's from a former marriage.
Oh.
So it's not her, you know, blood daughter, but she's been there since the daughter was just tiny, a little shaver. And that family sits down and watches the most bloody, gory horror movies ever since she was a little tiny girl. And you know what? She's very well adjusted and did just fine.
Yeah, this little girl was just like, I love princesses and Freddy Krueger. And I was okay, honey.
Jason Giaconetti, who's on the Vault of Horror, Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, has I believe she's 6 years, or I can't remember if she's 4 or 6 years old, but she watches a lot of, they do have lines that they draw. There's some movies that she's not going to see, but that, you know, if you're good at explaining to your kid, they can watch quite a bit, you know?
Yeah. All right. So I just to remind you about the note in there about whiny.
Oh yeah. I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Like it's written.
All right.
So the second one we got here, I don't know if it's IV dystopia or Roman numeral 4 dystopia, but they gave us a 5-star review.
Thank you.
All right. So here's now, this could be serious. This could be just somebody messing with us. But either way, 5-star review is a 5-star review. Great podcast full of bad puns, capitalized. Winnie millennial rants. Which I'm assuming means whiny millennial rants, a full-blown white knight, who I'm assuming is me, and Star Wars Clone Wars. I can't stop listening, no matter how much the hosts Hope and Chris piss me off. Keep it up! Or it says keep is up, but I'm assuming it means keep it up. P.S. Did you intend the clone helmet from the image to have the preacher arseface mouth? No, I didn't, but I did note that when I was making it, and did say, not as the arseface mouth, because I've never read Preacher, but I did notice it was a bit like a bataki mouth.
You know, that's not the first time I've heard people discuss how the clone helmets look like thongs.
Yeah, so, you know, it's sort of baked in. And as far as whiny millennials, I don't know if I've ever heard. I'm assuming he's talking about you, since you're the millennial.
Yeah, I guess so.
I've never heard. I haven't heard you whine on the show.
I mean, if I could go full blown Rarity from My Little Pony and whine if you want me to.
No, that's okay. But yeah. So somebody's got a little bit of anger issues on. Hey, this is a podcast with a girl and a guy on it talking from both our perspectives.
we have some stuff on here from a girl's perspective. And sometimes we sometimes Hope looks at stuff from a girl's point of view, and we'll mention the issues that come up that are associated with. Isn't it awful? And sometimes I agree with her, which I guess makes me a white knight. But hey, whatever, man. As long as you're listening, if we're pissing you off and you keep listening every week, then hey, man, doing our classy job.
Yeah, I mean, I maybe I'm not a girl. Gender is an illusion.
Ooh, it's just maybe, an illusion.
Maybe I'm pan-gendered for all you know. Yeah. I'm demisexual, so maybe I'm pan-gendered too. You don't know this. Maybe I just feel like being a woman today.
Demisexual.
Yeah, like Rex.
Do you like Demi more? Is that what you're saying?
No. It means being demisexual means it's a form of asexuality. And it means that
it means you're not sexual at all unless there's a Rex around.
No, it means that
unless you get an erection.
No, it means that I don't get sexually attracted to people until I actually get to know them.
Oh, all right.
Like I can recognize, be like, oh yes, this person's hot, handsome, or hot, but I'm not gonna have sex with them until I actually know them as people.
Oh, so, okay.
So that's what it means. So like I like guys and stuff like that.
So hot people don't just immediately trigger your lust, is what you're saying.
It's easier with like celebrities because there's like so much information about celebrities. Like, yeah, I would probably go and have a one night stand with Michael Sacha, hands down. I would totally would, because like I know a lot about him just because of stuff that's out there. Or like I wouldn't have a one night stand with Colin O'Donoghue because he's married, but I know a lot about Colin. So like if it ever arose, I'd feel actually relatively comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If I like just started dating a guy, like if I was just starting to date a guy and stuff like that, I would have to get to know him better to feel comfortable enough to be sexually attracted to him. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah, like I get why people have one night stands. Like, you know, some of my friends have one night stands. That's cool. It's just not my thing because I just can't fathom having sex with somebody I don't know really well. Because to me, it's like such a really personal, intimate thing. And if I'm gonna have sex with a guy and possibly get pregnant, I better damn well like them.
Yeah. Well, I can be like sexually attracted to someone I see, but it doesn't mean I'm going to try to. I'm usually not going to try to pursue it until the personality is also in line. You know, I can see people and go like, oh, there's a beautiful person I would like to have sex with.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, you know, that's not my impetus for like chasing them down and going, excuse me, ma'am, you fall within my visual scope of reference of positive sexual feedback, and maybe we should get to know each other better, you know?
Yeah, and that's how it is with me. Like, I can look at someone and be like, yeah, I would totally, you know, have sex with them, but I would have to get to know him first and stuff like that, or her. I'm open to both. But, I mean, it's definitely just something that... It's a form of asexuality.
Yeah. So. There, good. There you go, Dystopia. How's that?
Hope
that pissed you off, and keep listening.
If it makes you feel better for Dystopia or whatever your name is. 2 points. For one, Chris had to explain to me what a white knight was. I didn't know what it was.
What a crappy SJW you are, Hope, if you don't know what a white knight is. I should be wearing my fedora right now.
And the other thing is, just out of curiosity...
Let me explain what a white knight is to you, m'lady. Now just sit down and be quiet. And I'll explain it.
The other thing is, like, on iTunes, I was just like, huh. So I clicked on For Dystopia's name, and the only other podcast he had reviewed, and he was a very nice review, was Philadelphia Phillies podcast. And so there's my fellow... If we're both baseball bros, like, well, I like the Phillies. They're not my favorite team. I'm definitely a Braves fan. But I will say, fellow baseball bros, man, I'll be happy to talk baseball anytime with anybody. So
know he's probably in Philly.
Not necessarily.
No,
man.
Not necessarily. That's true. But
I was about to say, Braves country is the entire Southeast minus Florida. Because they're the team of the South. So, yeah.
Yeah, see, now we're crossing some of the streams just for this guy.
Yeah.
Assuming he's a guy.
He could be also pan-gendered. Maybe he
doesn't. I'm. As a matter of fact, I'm going to imagine that he is transgendered in about 15 different ways.
You're now transgendered to us. Dude, transgender people are awesome.
I'm gonna come up with my own pronoun for you, Dystopia.
We'll call him Jim. And I mean, like, J-E-M, like Steven Universe gems. So, you don't have a gender to us anymore.
He's dist-gendered.
Yeah.
D-Y-S-gendered. There you go.
Anyway, where can people find you, Chris?
You know where to find me. It's at twotruefreaks.com. That's my domain. That is the and I protect those who come here, for I am Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle. Anyway, we have so many podcasts, so many, you won't believe it. You gotta trust me on this.
When people are like, you gotta trust me, that's when people go.
Oh, you gotta go there and see it to believe it. You just, you won't believe it. We've got... Oh, geez. You know,
it's too good to be true.
It is. It is.
Too
many podcasts to describe, and it just covers the world of nerdery, including some of the latest podcast is, it took them a year to put it together, but it was worth it. It was almost 3 hours long. Long Play, our podcast of nerds talking about rock music. Bob Fischer and Paul Spataro did The Beatles' Abbey Road, one of the classic albums of all time, where they go through it song by song and nerd out on it.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I love The Beatles.
We're talking about maybe putting a moratorium on Beatles because we've already hit two in the whole... I think this was episode 20. I think we've done 20 of them so far. And we have hit two Beatles songs. The first one we did was, the first episode ever was Sgt. Pepper's, and it was Luke, Jack, and Eddie and I. And so we've done two Beatles albums, so we might try to encourage people to do, you know, we're trying to get a wide range of music, you know, depending on who's doing it, you know.
You know,
where we cover classic albums and stuff more off the beaten path.
Can people make suggestions even if they don't want to be on the show?
Sure.
I would totally like to throw you guys some Florence and the Machines or something like that.
Yeah. And it's going to get taken up by somebody who's also a fan of those particular albums, but there's probably somebody out there who shares enough, likes those albums enough to be able to talk about them like that. And then there's also the sort of doing an album that you may not have ever heard and then talking about it. So, yeah, it's very possible.
I would like for you guys to do more soundtracks because you guys did the James Bond songs that one time. So,
yeah, that was
like maybe like more like different soundtracks or maybe like each of your favorite theme songs from like, I don't know, like a genre, like superheroes, like favorite superhero theme songs, and have another one that's just like favorite like cartoon theme songs. That'd be fun. Or like favorite TV theme songs. Mine would be the Friends. So no one told you life was gonna be this way.
Well, since it's about doing albums, we'd have to do like TV's great like that. But then again, the TV's greatest hits albums were a big deal back in the day. Those were a big sell. You had to buy them over the TV. They were, you know, like a Ronco type thing. And I think they came out with like three or four of them at least. They were such big sellers because nobody ever thought people would want all their favorite TV theme songs all at once, but of course they did.
Yeah.
So that's actually a really good idea.
You're welcome.
Hey, no problem. Hey, so where can people find you, Hope?
You can find me at our Twitter, which is JGuysAndJedi. You can also find me at Hope Molnix, and I'm also the news beat writer for What the Fangirl. And good lord, I just wrote 11 articles from New York Comic Con, so I'm kind of spent.
That's amazing, yeah.
Oh, I wrote 11 articles in 2 days, so I'm expecting a nice writing paycheck this month. But yeah, I'm the news beat writer for What the Fangirl, and yeah, yay!
Wow, 11 articles in 2 days, that would break me.
Between working my regular work shift too, I pretty much would write a couple in the morning, go to work for 8 hours, come back, write till 3 a.m., wake up the next morning, wrote a few more, went to work, and then like wrote them all. And then I wrote one, just one, on the third day because they dropped on the very last day some Steven Universe news, and I was just like, oh damn it! So
wrote these many, I might as well just keep writing.
Yeah. So.
But you know, it's so I'm so terrible at talking about where to find me. I didn't mention our our Two True Freaks Facebook page, our Two True Freaks Twitter page, run by Gene Hendricks. I'm just terrible.
Our store. We have a Jagas and Jedi store.
Yes, on Cafe Press.
Yeah, you guys just go to our show notes on our twotruefreaks.com, and there's a link, and it says, check out the Jagas and Jedi merchandise store, and you too can be as swanky as Captain Rex.
Yeah.
Yeah!
When you get Jagas and Jedi merchandise, they pump out that piece of merchandise for you. So you're talking, when you get little Jagas and Jedi, that's not something mass-produced. There ain't thousands of those bumping around.
No.
If we're lucky, there'll be dozens of them, making them a rare collector's item if we ever hit it big.
Yeah.
So it's an investment.
Yeah, maybe not, probably not. But wear it anyway, because it'll look cool. So.
Yes.
I don't have anything else for this episode, do you?
Not me. I would say come back next time. We're doing it's going to be a double-size episode.
Because we decided that we're going to put the two Zillow Beast episodes in one full episode.
Yep,
so.
And it'll be episode 42, which is the secret to the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah, and at some point we're going to have an episode coming up with my mom, so...
Which is the answer to hope's life, the universe, and everything.
No, I know where I came from, thanks. I came from my mommy's vagina and my daddy's ballsack.
They work together to make a hope.
Bye.
Bye.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm not even... Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass!